G-Force, a kaiju podcast.
G-Force?
Well, it's big and terrible. More frightening than I ever thought possible.
Kiss you, guys.
What terrible language!
Calling Monster Island. Calling Monster Island.
And now, your hosts.
One is me, and the other is Godzilla.
Nick and Andrew.
Hello, and welcome to episode 69 of G-Force, a kaiju podcast, a show in which a rotating cast of kaiju enthusiasts gets together every other week to discuss all things kaiju. My name is Nick, and with me is my co-host.
This is Andrew, and welcome to season four.
I'm glad you said that, because I almost said season three.
Welcome to what I hope is season four. Our brains are all fried. It's the new year.
Yep.
But hey, we are back. And a big shout out to Nick, who is not just our host, but also the sole editor for this last season. And you have really been killing it, Nick. That is a lot of work. And I want to make sure that our audience is well aware of just how much you do for this show.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. And, you know, as always, we are joined by a couple of our friends.
Hey, this is James.
Hey, this is Ike, and I love Godzilla.
Yeah, the rest of us hate it. So we thought we'd get Ike on here to balance it out.
Yeah.
and true to theme, we are minus one because Mr. Brendan was supposed to join us today, but unfortunately was not feeling well. So
yes. But yeah, as we have implied now, we are discussing the newest Godzilla film, Godzilla Minus One, the film released appropriately enough for this episode number on Godzilla's 69th anniversary, though they're calling it the 70th anniversary film. And yeah, I should probably acknowledge that this is a more casual episode, like what our Rodan episode ended up being, because the movie just came out. And, you know, unlike Godzilla versus Kong, we're just kind of gonna give our initial thoughts. And then later on, once it's out on home video and stuff, we'll add it to the random number generator. And then once it's selected, we'll give it a more proper episode. But this will just be more of a hopefully brief rundown of our sort of kind of first impressions. Not for me, because I've seen it three times already, but my third impressions, I guess.
Yeah, my second impressions.
Yeah.
It's worth mentioning, you know, we're not going to do the synopsis or the, you know, rundown of the cast list, that sort of thing right now. But it is worth mentioning just at time of recording here. This film was released, was it December 1st in the United States?
Yes.
December 1st. And for a 1 week run, we are now over a month from that. And when I Googled it to check the release date, I still had showtimes popping up.
Yeah, it currently, we're recording this on January 6th. At this point in time, it has been extended until January 10th in the US. And who knows how long it's going to keep getting extended, because it's still doing pretty solid right now.
This is a runaway smash success for a foreign imported subtitled film. Like, I don't know if this has happened since, what, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon? Like, this is unprecedented. It's amazing. And it's kind of a thrill to be in the middle of it, to just see a Godzilla movie exceed all expectations in the U.S. market.
And I'm sure plenty other podcasts will cover this, but it's worth mentioning anyway that it's currently the third highest grossing Japanese film to ever be released in the U.S. behind a Demon Slayer movie, I can't remember the full name of, and Pokemon, the first movie. And it's the highest grossing live action Japanese movie in the U.S. ever, which is amazing. And it's really cool to see.
As much as I love Mewtwo Strikes Back, I would really, you know, appreciate it if this one shot all the way to the top.
Yeah.
I get the feeling that Pokemon, having been dubbed and having a massive child fan base, are not numbers we're going to be able to compete with. But boy, it would be sweet if that happened.
Oh, yeah. Hey, future Nick here, cutting in really quick just to give an update. Since we recorded this episode, Godzilla Minus One finished its U.S. theatrical run with $56 million at the U.S. box office, meaning it beat the Demon Slayer film to become the number two Japanese film ever released in the U.S., but still behind Pokemon the first movie. It became the third highest grossing foreign language film in the U.S., behind Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, and Life is Beautiful. The Pokemon movie doesn't count here because it was released in English. It passed $100 million at the worldwide box office. It received 12 nominations at the Japanese Academy Awards and has been nominated for Best Visual Effects at the Oscars, making it the first Godzilla film to ever get nominated for anything at the Oscars, which is absolutely amazing. This movie completely deserves it. It's also gotten nominations for loads of other awards. This movie just, I think, completely blew away everyone's expectations for how successful it would be, at least in the Western world. Okay. That's all. Back to the episode. But yeah, for now, before we get into the movie, I would like to ask you guys, like, how you were feeling, like, before the movie came out, like, what your anticipation was like. Because I know for me, you know, I mean, I was on the episode talking about the trailer, so obviously the audience knows how excited I was. But it got to a point where, like, right before I saw it, I was getting so excited that I was getting, like, nervous because I had never seen a live-action Toho movie, Toho Godzilla movie, or any Toho Godzilla movie brand new in the theater before. So I was just, like, ready to blow up because I was so excited about it. So I'm curious how you guys were feeling, like, before the movie released.
Yeah, so, I mean, I was obviously pretty excited for a new Japanese Godzilla movie. I mean, that's kind of like the main event, right? Like, more so than anything that, like, Legendary Pictures might do. Like, a new Toho Godzilla movie is, like it doesn't get bigger and more legit than that. I think what happened with this movie, though, is that I sort of, for a couple of reasons, just sort of settled into the idea that I wasn't going to get to see it in theaters. And that's because I live in a very small town that just doesn't get that many movies. And the only movies they get are, like, the very biggest movies. And the movie theater isn't even open, like, every day of the week. And I was, like, away traveling when the movie first came out. And so just those two things together, I just, like, just sort of figured, oh, I'm probably not going to be able to see it. So I'll probably have to wait until it actually comes out on home media. And at that point, it was like my hype kind of subsided because I just kind of like got into the mindset of, oh, I'm not even going to see it. So I think when I was able to see it, because they extended the, like Nick and Andrew were just talking about, they extended the run in theaters. They extended that so long. And I happened to be back in my hometown visiting my parents for Christmas. So I was able to go, which was great. But yeah, sitting in that theater, I think the hype had kind of already passed me by, but still very excited.
So for me, when I first heard about this movie being announced, I was excited because it's a Toho Godzilla film. But when we learned about the setting for the film, I was in the camp. I was a little skeptical because, you know, it was set before 54, and that was kind of a sort of delicate, sacred ground for Godzilla, if you know what I mean. So going into it, I kind of had an open mind, but safe to say, you know, I ended up seeing it three times and I really, really enjoyed the film.
So for me, I was super excited. I know that there are people that feel, probably rightly, that we are in a golden age of Godzilla right now. To me, this is still a drought. Like, we had the Showa, Heisei, and Millennium era, and that ended in 2004. And since then, we've had Shin Godzilla and Minus One. Like, sure, there have been a lot of little side projects. Like, oh, you made some cartoons. That's nice. Oh, there's some American ones. That's nice. And I mean, I really love Godzilla 2014. It's not like none of those did anything for me, although most of them actually didn't. But for me, the real deal, live action Toho Godzilla movies, to me, we're still in those wilderness years. That's how it's felt to me. And again, as someone that really dislikes 2/3 of the anime movies, didn't like Singular Point and thought Shin was just okay. It's almost felt like Final Wars really was sort of the end of an era that has never revived for me. So while everyone else has been riding high, I've just kind of been left behind. So when this was announced, I was super stoked. And, you know, the trailers look good. maybe this would be a chance for Godzilla to sort of get back on form for me. So I was really anticipating it. I also ended up one of the last of our group to see it just before James. And everyone was coming in with these super rave reviews. And I was a little bit wary of, I guess, call it Firefly syndrome. Because, you know, for years I heard what an amazing show Firefly was. So great. You got the brown coats out there. It deserves. And if any show was cut off before its time, it was Firefly. So we finally got around to watching Firefly. It's like, that was fine, I guess. Like, I was expecting something more because all of the praise had built the anticipation up to a level that no show could possibly fulfill. It could not possibly be as amazing as everyone had hyped it up to be. And so it just sort of ended up a letdown. So I was kind of worried that everyone kept saying, this is the greatest thing ever. This is the greatest thing ever. I was like, okay, stop. I gotta leave the Discord for a few days. So I feel like this is going to set my expectations so high and the movie's going to disappoint me. So that was my only worry going into it, that it's like, everyone's talked it up so much. I'll probably end up being disappointed if this isn't the greatest thing since sliced bread, then there's nowhere for me to go but disappointment.
Well, I guess the natural place to go now is, did this movie live up to our expectations?
For me, no, the movie did not live up to the expectations that all you guys set out. It exceeded them, which just completely blew my socks off. I did not expect that, but it was the best thing since sliced bread for me.
I guess for me, I already said it. I thought it was a great movie, right? It deserves all the praise. Like, do I have really any complaints for it? No. But I guess if I had to put it this way, some of the things Godzilla did, like he also did in films that are already like my favorites, you know what I mean? Like in GMK and all that. So like, it's a great film, but I don't know if it still like cracks my like top, you know, like five, if that makes sense.
I thought it was really great. It definitely lived up to my expectations. It was a really, really good movie. I wasn't like in love with it in the same way that like most of the people in our group were, which seemed to kick off a firestorm in our group chat where everyone was like, what? This isn't your favorite thing ever? How dare you? I was like, yeah, it's good. It's pretty good. It's a good movie. leave me alone.
We were just so excited with each new person. It was like 10 out of 10, 10 out of 10, 10 out of 10. Are we all finally going to agree on a Godzilla movie? And then James comes in and is like, 8 out of 10. Oh, no. The last one and we would have got a streak.
8 out of 10 is so good, though. That's a really good movie, 8 out of 10. That's
I know. But we were just so excited to have a movie that we were all unanimous on, like, you know, the exact feeling of. And you came in and broke that by feeling slightly less than the rest of the group.
Okay, look. I mean, we're still basically unanimous. And I think as the movie has sat with me, it's probably gone up. It's probably gone up to like a 9.
And you've only seen it like once, right?
I've seen it 3 times.
What? I thought you saw it once. I didn't even know.
No, I saw it 3 times.
Oh, dang. Now I'm the guy lagging behind, having only seen it twice in theaters.
Yeah, Andrew, don't you love this movie? This is like the best movie ever. How come you haven't seen it 3 times?
Touche.
No, I mean, it's a very good movie. I think similar to Ike, it's not going to like crack my top 5 anytime soon. But I don't think any Godzilla movie is ever going to do that. Like any new Godzilla movie, because my top 5 and even past 5 are like so set in stone.
Yeah, it's fair.
It was it's a great movie. And I think even more exciting than the movie has been like kind of the reaction to the movie, like in like culture at large. Like I've never even like Shin was like kind of a mini phenomenon, but even then it was still kind of like a niche nerdy thing, at least in the West.
It was kind of in its own little bubble.
Yeah. And this is like the first true like breakout Godzilla movie for like mainstream Western audiences. Like the theater was pretty full every time I went. They can't all have been like hardcore Godzilla fans. People are talking about it. Like every big like YouTube reviewer has like reviewed it. It's been in like the news. Like I saw the local like CBC Edmonton like did like a little like review of it on the radio. which was hilarious. That's where I was over Christmas. Yeah, it's just so cool. Like finally.
The third time I saw it was just a few days after Christmas. The movie had already been in theaters for like almost a month. And the theater, it was still one of the smaller theaters that they had, but it was still packed. Like, we got there and, you know, we went to get our tickets and, you know, like, they have you pick out your seats beforehand. And I was like, okay, like, there's probably not going to be very many people in there. We'll probably just sit like right in like the middle of the theater or something, you know? And we had to sit in almost the very front row. Like, we sat in the second row from where the screen was, because the whole theater was fucking packed still. And it was amazing. And at the end, everyone clapped. And I've never experienced that in a movie like almost a month out from it being released. Usually that's like, in my experience, like an opening weekend or at least first week kind of thing. So, yeah, just seeing how much people are into this movie is over here in the U.S. is amazing.
For me, there's an interesting phenomenon, because you were talking about it not cracking your top five. And for me, it actually does. I've got one from each of the prior series ahead of it. I got 2000, Son of Godzilla, and Biollante. And that's funny, actually, because then I have Minus One and 2014. So my top five are like one from each series. Not intentionally.
Oh, nice.
But the funny thing is, I found myself going afterwards, like sort of second guessing that and being like, was it really that great? What did I like? When I think back on it, it's a guy in the rain crying a lot. You know, there's that part with the boat. That was really cool. I really like some of those opening shots in the island. For really, is there that much else there? And then I went and saw it in theaters again. I took my son, and it was just like, oh, wow. Yeah, no, this is amazing. This is okay. That wasn't a fluke. That wasn't like a first time thing. I love that. And then when I'm sitting here, the same thing is happening again. I find it really weird. To me, it's the kind of thing that everything that is great about it, for me, almost doesn't stick in the memory. Like, looking back on it, it's hard to put a finger on. If someone said, tell me why you love that movie so much, I would almost just be going, I don't know, you know, but then when I'm sitting there experiencing it, I can put my finger on it, you know, everything that I love about it. But it is just so weird. I've never had a movie like that where what I love about it doesn't stick in my memory. Only the fact that I know that I did. And when I go see it, I'm reminded of all the reasons why.
Yeah, I will say that this absolutely annihilated my expectations as well. Like I said, I was so excited that I was like nervous, because I also did kind of get a similar thing where I was like, oh man, is this overhyped? Like, am I going to sit down and realize that it's actually not that great and everyone's just overhyping it like crazy? And then I watched it and I like cried a little bit at the end and stuff. And like,
me too.
Yeah, the Godzilla scenes had my heart racing, and it was just, man, it was like everything I was hoping it would be and more. I will say I would have liked, and look, I'm not the kind of guy who's like, oh, Godzilla doesn't get enough screen time or anything like that. But I was a little like, I did kind of want to see more of this Godzilla, because I just thought he was just such a cool Godzilla, you know, like he very much, and I know everyone makes this comparison, but he really reminded me of the Godzilla in GMK, where he's just a super brutal, like absolute force to be reckoned with. You know, like I said, every time he was on screen, my heart was racing, which maybe it's good he wasn't on there more, because maybe I would have had like a heart attack or something in the middle of the movie. But yeah, it's just, I don't know. I'm going off the rails now. I just thought this movie was amazing. Oh, also, I feel like we should say, just in case, because I know it's not released in like every country ever, but in case you're listening to this in a country that where this hasn't been released yet, we will most definitely probably get into spoilers here. So just a warning on that.
Yeah. If you haven't already been spoiled already, abandon ship, get out now.
Yeah.
I would definitely agree there that this is the scariest Godzilla has been to me since the original film. Maybe GMK. I haven't seen it in long enough to compare. I know he is pretty intimidating there. But yeah, just the sheer malevolence. Just the whole boat chase scene.
Oh, yeah.
Like, just the whole boat chase scene. It's just like, oh, my God. And then in the Ginza destruction, the way he, like, he kind of, you know, savages the theater. And then he turns around and his tail just takes out like the whole rest of the block.
Yeah.
Like he is leveling buildings with a speed and a scope that we've never seen before. Like, you know, it's not like the other Godzillas couldn't do that, but it would take them a few minutes. He's doing it in seconds. See, you know, it reminds me of Shin Godzilla's lightsaber beam, just, you know, chopping up the whole city in a matter of seconds. It's terrifying how casually destructive he can be. And yeah, I've never really felt that, not even with Shin. Shin, he freaked me out when he did his jaw split and everything, but this was a level to me just a cut above in terms of just how scary this guy was.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
I think with Shin, the thing about Shin is there was something about his face where he like, it was more like the face of a real animal where you can't really impart any like sort of like emotion on it. It's just a creature. Whereas like, so, you know, it's obviously this very dangerous animal, but you don't know for sure that it's like malicious against us except when attacked. Whereas minus one Godzilla was like he just wanted to kill. Like he comes ashore and he's just ready to kill, right? Like even the first scene, like he just takes out that the guy on like the searchlight tower, just takes that dude out just for shining a searchlight on him. Like this was a mean Godzilla who just wanted to just mesh it up.
Yeah. I think with Shin Godzilla, like, yeah, you're right. You can't read him, you know? He's just kind of moving, and we're just kind of in his way, essentially. But, like, he's, like, scary in a different way, where there's, like, a lot more body horror. And there's kind of body horror here with the regeneration. But, yeah, like you were saying, this Godzilla, he's just angry, and he just wants to destroy everything in front of him. And, you know, and other people have said this, but part of what makes him so scary is also that you care about the characters so much in this. They're so well written and developed, and they all feel so, like, just well-rounded. And
yeah, this is the most I have connected to a Godzilla cast since 2000.
Yeah, just whenever they're in danger, it's like you just don't want to see them get hurt. And Godzilla's, like, so much scarier for that reason.
And I like that they, you know, in Shin Godzilla, we have this global apocalyptic scale and will a nuke be dropped on Tokyo, you know? And in King of the Monsters, it's the literal whole world at stake. And I like that here that they managed to bring it in smaller. Like, Godzilla's still a threat. He's still a danger. Like, the US or Soviets might be able to take care of him if they had to, if the Cold War wasn't keeping them, you know, out of it. But here the stakes really are just that we don't want to see him take a single life. Not to see a single one of these people that are out to, you know, that is their victory, that we will defeat Godzilla without a life being lost. Now, obviously, during the Ginza attack and everything, lives are lost beforehand. But you know what I mean? I like that it brings it down to such a personal scale. And, you know, we talked a little in the King of the Monsters episode where I was very off put by the Rodan scene. Because, yeah, Rodan goes and destroys a bunch of little model fighters in, you know, 1956. Okay, like, I actually see the pilot's face right there as he pulls and ejects, and then Rodan gulps him up in 2019. I don't like that so much, you know? But that goes to illustrate that in these monster movies, yeah, life can be pretty cheap. Like, the battalion of tanks, the battalion of fighters is pretty much just there to give us a fun destruction scene. We're not really thinking about the, you know, all of the actual human cost that is supposed to be in there, partly because there's a disconnect in how it's filmed and portrayed, you know. But here, just to bring it so personally, make it so human on such a scale that, yeah, our victory is not going to be that we save the planet or even save the country. It's going to be that we do this without losing any innocent lives, because each individual life is precious. That to me is just a triumph of storytelling, to have a giant monster movie communicated in those terms or framed in that way.
Yeah, I definitely think there's a theme that goes through the whole movie of like the value of life. Yeah, you see it definitely in the climax and definitely in the really cool speech that Doc gives, the scientist character, about like this country has valued life too cheaply. Like he's talking about like, you know, World War II and everything.
And I love that speech so much.
It's one of the best scenes of the movie. Yeah. This is a Godzilla movie where so many of the best scenes, like Godzilla's not even on screen, which is kind of amazing.
Sort of like the average episode of Godzilla the series.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's also that, I mean, that theme is like, it's also spun directly into the main character's like whole kind of character arc, right? Koichi's whole thing about being like this failed kamikaze pilot, and he's got all this shame about it, and you know, he gets back home and he's just like, he's greeted with derision by his neighbor, and he goes through the whole movie with a death wish, right? Like, that's why he won't, at least my interpretation was, that's why he wouldn't marry, I forget her name.
Noriko.
Yeah, that's why he wouldn't, like, get together with Noriko, or, like, you know, let the little girl call him dad, because the whole movie, he's basically got a death wish. Like, he's a dead man walking. He wants to somehow atone for what he perceives are his you know, wrongs during the war.
Yeah, I think he feels like his is just a life that's not worth sharing.
Yeah,
he's just so devalued. He's, even if he's not actively seeking death, he just feels like, I am so worthless, my life is of no value, and no one else should be shackled to me, you know.
Exactly. And then the movie ends with this just like amazing, like, sort of rejection of that, and this amazing like embrace of life. And yeah, it's the sort of thematic underpinnings of the movie, and the how that, you know, is threaded through the main character's story is really well done.
I feel like I would be remiss not to point out that one could very easily look at this as the third coming of Godzilla versus Megaguirus, because this is basically Godzilla against Mechagodzilla again. I literally took that note in the theater. I called Koichi Kamikaze Akane, because it's basically the whole same, no life is worthless, you know. He's got a firebombing of Tokyo survivor instead of a little girl with a plant telling him, but it's still basically the same basic framework of guy messes up, freezes up, doesn't take out Godzilla, carrying this burden, thinks he's worthless. Not to say that this movie is lacking in originality, but it is kind of funny that this is like basically the third iteration of that plot since the year 2000.
You're right, but I'm so angry about it. How dare you compare this movie to Godzilla and Megaguirus?
Believe me, I hate myself for doing it.
You're actually not the first person I've heard make that connection.
I think Andrew hit it right on the head. It's also kind of like Godzilla meets It's a Wonderful Life, with the whole value of life thing going on. But I also got some heavy Godzilla Raids Again vibes with the main character. You know, the whole...
I can see that.
Kamikaze bit going on. And I'll be honest, you know, if Andrew brought up Godzilla versus Megaguirus, I got Godzilla versus King Ghidorah vibes in the opening. The whole Godzilla attacking World War II soldiers in like a smaller form.
Yeah.
This is one of my few complaints about the movie, is I don't love that scene.
That was the one scene my son had trouble with. That was a bit too intense for him.
I didn't know James was your son.
His long lost Canadian son.
But yeah, it was a little Jurassic Park.
Yeah, I love that scene conceptually. I've always really loved the Godzillasaurus like idea, but I just didn't love the execution. Like, I just think Godzilla, first of all, his pre-mutation look, I just didn't think was different enough.
Actually, executions plural. He took out a lot of guys.
Yeah, yes. Thank you, Andrew. Yeah, I just, if you're gonna have a pre-mutation Godzilla, like make it look more different. Like, he could have looked more like a regular dinosaur, and he was like already gargantuan. Like, he's like clearly smaller than the post-nuke Godzilla, but like already like so incredibly big. And I just thought the framing and like the CGI of it all, and just like, not the CGI. The CGI was good, but just like, it just all felt a little awkward and not like super visually appealing to me, that scene. No problem with it conceptually. Like, it works really great in the story and everything, but I just think it's just, if I was doing that scene, it's just kind of not how I would have done it, I guess. Not that that counts for anything, but yeah.
Yeah, I definitely agree with James about his design. Like, I saw some figures of it compare with the post-Godzilla, you know, mutation. And I was surprised the dorsal plates are so similar between, you know, Godzilla and his small dinosaur form and his mutation. But one thing I do appreciate about the whole Godzilla-saurus part of the film is that he doesn't eat anybody. You know, because I believe that's a thing Toho has been pretty big about. It's Godzilla never eats a human. And I was glad that whenever he chomps on them in the opening, he just tosses them away like little army soldier toys.
Yeah, agreed.
I don't disagree necessarily about the design, because I would also imagine him being like looking even more different. But I do really like the design. I think it looks really cool. And I don't feel like he was that big. I mean, I feel like he just kind of felt like he didn't feel like something that was too big to exist at that point to me. Like whenever he grabs the plane with his mouth, it's still like kind of big compared to him. Like it doesn't feel like he's like a kid throwing his toys around. Like it feels believable to a degree, you know, like at least as believable as it can feel. He just kind of feels like a bigger than usual dinosaur to me. But yeah, I like that scene a lot. It's very, very intense. And I liked it so much that when I went home, the first thing I did was try and find a camera rip footage of that scene, because I just wanted to see it again.
So I want to jump back even a little earlier than that. I found the opening of this movie very striking. Firstly, just the choice to go with a kamikaze pilot. I thought that was a bold and a really interesting angle that has not been exploited before. I mean, partly because of the time period it's set in, but you know. And I loved the fact that they did Odo Island and reference, you know, it being the natives' god that, you know, affected their fishing. All that was wonderful. But to me, I want to say it's second shot of the movie, the one of the plane just coming in for a landing framed on the bomb underneath. Right from the beginning, that really just struck me visually of just saying, Godzilla movies don't really look like this. It's a surprisingly American sort of filming style, at least compared to any of the other Toho movies that I've seen. But I just found the way that the movie is shot, the overall look that it is given, just the cinematography, the camera movement, it feels very different than any Godzilla movie that I've seen before, except maybe in the MonsterVerse. And that was what really jumped out to me right from the get-go. That was one of the biggest things that has stuck with me through the movie, honestly, is even just that shot of the, you know, of the bomb with the plane landing. So maybe I wasn't paying that close attention by the time that Godzilla showed up, except, you know, by being involved in the adrenaline rush. But I was just too busy being distracted with how pretty and how unique the whole opening sequence on the island looked.
I definitely think there's something unique about this movie in the way it focuses on character. Like you're talking about, you know, how it maybe kind of feels a little bit closer to like the MonsterVerse than like earlier Godzilla movies. Like I don't want to make any like sweeping generalizations about like Japanese movies, because there's like a whole world of like Japanese like dramas and like, you know, kind of all kinds of movies that I've never seen. But definitely just in kaiju movies, you don't often get kaiju movies that are so focused on one protagonist and like their like little personal struggle. Not that, and you know, there's plenty of kaiju movies with great human characters, but it's just framed a little bit differently. It's always framed a little more like the problem is just getting rid of, you know, the kaiju or something. I mean, you could think of other examples where there's more of like a personal kind of struggle, like Gamera 3, maybe with the girl that bonds with Iris.
Ayana,
yeah. I was going to say Akane, but I knew that was wrong. and like, you know, you can think of other examples probably, but yeah, there's something that felt a little new here with just like, no, we're going to focus in on this one guy, and there'll be other characters and they'll be well realized and well drawn, and you know, you'll understand their motivations and where they're coming from, you know, like for example, I forget his name, but the kid character, the like the younger one who's like not a veteran, he's kind of got like a little arc, but we're mostly focused on this one guy and his personal journey. Not only is the main focus of the film, but also ties into the sort of greater message and themes of the movie. I'm having a hard time thinking of a Godzilla movie that has done that. Maybe GMK. Maybe GMK with I'm forgetting every single character's name now. But the main girl in that, she's got kind of a little journey with like her career and like getting the respect of her dad and stuff. But maybe I'm wrong, but this feels different.
Yeah, to me, this is like, out of all the Japanese monster movies I've seen, and I haven't seen all of them, this one, Gamera 3 and Gamera the Brave are the ones that feel like the most personal for the human characters, you know, where it's so focused on just like a personal struggle. And yeah, I mean, I just think the character writing in this and acting is so good. I think this is my favorite human cast of a Godzilla movie. Like, I think Dr. Sarazawa, the original Sarazawa, is probably still like my favorite singular human character. But the whole cast in general is, for this, is probably my favorite human cast. Everyone is just so good. And it's like, it's not just Koichi who gets to have an arc here. And usually, like, I like a lot of the human characters in Godzilla movies. And you'll never catch me saying that the human characters are bad just automatically in a Godzilla movie. But usually they don't have like these big arcs most of the time. You know, there are some, but most of the time it's just, you know, characters that are just like entertaining for me, you know. But this one, it's not even just Koichi who gets the big arc, because his neighbor, who now I can't remember her name, gets an arc where at first, you know, she's all like, she's grieving and she's blaming it on Koichi for not doing his duty as a kamikaze pilot, and basically thinks he should have killed himself for Japan, essentially. And then by the end, whenever he goes to try to kamikaze himself on Godzilla, and then when he comes back alive, you know, she's like hitting him again like she was at the start, basically being like, why would you go and do that? You know, like, she's turned around and now doesn't want him to fulfill his duty as a kamikaze pilot. And then there's also the Tachibana guy, the mechanic, who was the same way. He was the one that kind of convinced Koichi that it's okay to live, whenever earlier he was also equally angry. But they're just, the characters, even like the ones without the big arcs, are just very like, they're just so entertaining and they feel so full of life, you know, just all around such a great cast. I can't even pick a favorite character because they're all so good.
Yeah, I really like Doc and the Captain.
Me too.
I think those are my two favorites. You don't get like all the time with them, but you like, you just really feel like you know who they are, right? Just from the way they carry themselves and the way those actors perform those roles.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't really have a lot to add. I would say with the neighbor character, I also like how, you know, at first she seems very unlikable in, you know, in berating him. But I like how quickly you can see that that is her grief talking, and that she is really, you know, not that bitter, a spiteful person. Not that she really wishes that he was dead, but just that she's in such pain from her own loss. And I like how the movie also sort of examines how each of the different characters has dealt with that loss in a different way. You know, Koichi is consumed by it. Noriko is driven to survive by it. And the neighbor, again, her name eludes me at the moment,
Sumiko.
Thank you. Is first broken by it, but then manages to sort of find her purpose in caring again, even if she can't bring herself to be warm or caring toward the adult. She can still find it. Having a child there allows her to have an anchor to find her compassion and her kindness again. Like, there's just so many wonderful things going on with the characters. And again, like you talked about with the kid on the boat, he represents the other spectrum of it. You know, he idolizes war foolishly because he doesn't know what he's talking about. And, you know, you've just got so many different perspectives, even on having been through the war. Some people are, I served my time, you know, in the meeting. Some people, like the kid, wish they'd had a shot of it. Some people, like Koichi, are racked with guilt for what happened, or are, you know, just sort of devastated by it. Same with Tachibana. And then you've got others that say, well, look, I stepped up because if I didn't do it, who would? And, you know, that hasn't changed, and at least now I'm fighting for a good cause, a righteous cause, instead of the corrupt empire that keeps everyone in the dark and treats life cheaply that we used to be. So I just love the spectrum of different characters and character perspectives that we see centering around both the war and around dealing with, you know, loss and tragedy and trauma.
Yeah, and I really love Doc. Like, I love this speech he's giving. Well, not really like a speech, but like whenever he's going over the plan, there's a moment where he, before he explains like the Freon gas stuff, they have like the little dinosaur model, the like wooden dinosaur model in the tank with the water and just floating on top of the water. He's like, what do you think will happen if we surround this thing with a bunch of Freon gas bubbles? And then everyone's like, oh, it's just going to stay. It's just going to stay there. And then he gets this little smirk on his face. Like, he's like a little excited to like prove them wrong. and I think that's great. Just like a great little bit of acting from him. And whenever he is like in front of the projector and he like explains about like trying to kill Godzilla with the rapid pressure of just shoving him underwater as fast as they can. And he just has this look on his face, like, not like he's deranged, but like, he's just so like serious about this plan. And he's like, and then he says something like, we'll kill Godzilla with the power of the sea. And that's just such a cool line.
You can almost see on his face how like proud he is of that line. Like,
yeah,
I came up with that a week ago and I've been waiting to drop that one on. It's funny too, because between this and the coagulant stuff in Shin Godzilla, I feel like they've been like, you know what? We got to step up our game. We've been doing like bombs and oxygen destroyers. We got to get more creative in how we're going to defeat Godzilla. So I like how out of the box the last couple films have been with that.
The plan B is basically just to give Godzilla the bends.
Yeah. And I love that. That it's just so like, it's so off the wall, but it's really interesting.
Yeah.
And I also like that in that scene with the, you know, the tank of bubbles again, that feels like a 1954 reference. I love how those are sprinkled in there, you know, the falling reporters and the Odo Island stuff and that, but not overwhelmingly so.
Can we talk about the score?
Yeah.
Beautiful.
You know, I'm very interested to hear what you think about the score, because I like sort of that, the, you know, the theme we get for the end, that sort of just repeating dun 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 as he's flying and everything. But for the most part, I found the score extremely effective. But I feel like if I listened to it as a soundtrack, it would be almost nothing. Like, the boat chase is almost just like one sustained note. Like, the ending battle theme is basically three notes repeated over and over and over again. So I was just thinking how incredibly minimalist and repetitive, and how kind of like Godzilla 2014, how nothing it would be apart from the movie, but how perfectly it works for the movie. So I'd be very interested to hear from someone that actually was left with an impression of the score versus sort of having no impression like I did.
Well, I guess in my case, you know, I was one of those people that when the soundtrack was released, before I even got to see the movie, I listened to it, you know, guilty as charged. But the fact that this film got to use the original King Kong versus Godzilla score, like, you know, revamped and whatnot, the MonsterVerse films have even tried like to use the, you know, King Kong versus Godzilla theme and it's Godzilla versus Kong film, just, you know, kind of put a funny taste in my mouth. But besides the return of the Mothra versus Godzilla theme, and the King Kong versus Godzilla theme, I love all the new tracks. Like, man, what's the main theme called? The one that's in the trailer?
Divine.
Divine, yeah, that was really good. You know, the second I heard it in the trailer, then I hear it in the whole film, it was mind-blowing. But I know Andrew brought up that track that plays when they're on the little boat trying to get away from Godzilla. I think the track's called Confusion. I liked how ambient it was, you know? It's very... It's not laid back, but, you know, it's a very subtle, like, track. It's not, like, blaring. It's just, you know, it's... I guess it is just background noise, but that one did stick out to me with how much it set the mood of being lost at sea of Godzilla chasing you.
I really liked the score. I mean, I loved the score. I listened to a little bit of it before I saw the movie. I listened to the first track, which plays during the Odo Island attack. And I remember listening to that and being like, why is this so creepy sounding? Like, I liked it, but I was like, I've never heard anything like this in a Godzilla movie before. And then I listened to like all the iterations of the Ifukube themes, which is great. And I have a big thing about how they're utilized specifically and like the timing of them, but I think I'm going to save it for our eventual like full review of this movie. So there's that teaser for you. But those are really great. And the rest of it, it is a lot more ambience than we're used to in Godzilla movies, especially from Japan. But that said, when I saw it the second time, I paid a little closer attention to it. And I noticed that there are definitely, despite the ambience, there are still like various leitmotifs that are used through the different tracks and stuff, particularly one that's associated with Godzilla Divine, like we mentioned earlier, which I kind of see as Naoki Sato's original Godzilla theme for this movie. That's obviously great, and I know a lot of people really like that. But the rest of the score, it's like it took a couple watches for me to like notice how, yes, it's minimalistic, but there's still a lot of like melody to it. I'd have to listen to it again and really put together my thoughts on it for the next time we talk about this movie. But yeah, I mean, I really like this score, and I think listening to it on its own in full for the first time, I was surprised how well it worked outside of the film.
So I liked the score. I'm probably with Andrew where, like, other than that one theme, I don't like it. Like, it works really well in the movie, but like I can't even really remember much of how it sounds, like any one particular track except for that kind of one track. But the reason I brought up score is like I was so excited by the Akira Ifukube moments. Like the Mothra vs. Godzilla theme that plays during the Ginza attack, and then the classic theme that plays during the boat.
Yeah, I was just about to say when you guys brought it up, I had forgotten about that. But during the whole ship circling around him to get the Freon canisters, I was ecstatic over it, especially the King Kong versus Godzilla. Who would expect that one?
Yeah, and what was so cool about it was just like sitting in like a theater. You're not even at some weird like what's that company that does all the special screenings? It's not Funimation, but it's like Fandango.
Fathom Events.
Oh, Fathom. Yeah. You're in like a theater in like a big Western city. And like, it's not some weird Fathom event. It's like just a normal mainstream release. The theater is like reasonably packed, and this like Akira Ifukube music is blasting like over all of them. And I was just like, this is so nerdy, but I kept like kind of like looking around the theater during that part. I was just like, you guys are so lucky. You guys, this is so exciting for you guys to get to hear this music because this music is so good. And who knows what they were really thinking, but like, it just made me so happy. And then when it plays again over the end credits, like you get the GMK like skin regenerating in the water, and then like part of the classic theme plays, and then you get the title card, and then the credits start, and you get the other part of the classic theme. And like, again, I kind of like was looking around, just like, isn't it so good? Isn't it so good, all you strangers? It's just so cool. It's so cool that happened. Like, I never thought, well, I guess King of the Monsters had some classic themes too, but I don't know. It was so much more like front and center in this movie. It just made me so happy. It was just brought a warm feeling to my to my cold heart.
I know what you mean. And it is different than King of the Monsters, because as great as the score for that film is. It's very like, and I know you've talked about this before, but the sound effects in that movie are so loud and that they kind of like drown out the music at certain points. And Bear McCreary, who is great, and I love his renditions of the Akira Fukube themes, he adds a lot to them, which is fine, and it sounds great. But it's kind of like, with this, it's just straight up the classic themes. And they're loud, you can hear them, and you know, like, obviously they're re-recorded, and they're more beefed up, but it's just the classic theme playing in your American theater, well, in your case, Canadian theater, to a packed, decently sized audience. And it really is just a great feeling. Every time I've seen it, I'm just like, okay, we gotta wait until, like, sorry, everyone, this is a moment for me. We have to wait until the theme is over and then we can leave.
Yeah, man, hearing the Ifukube theme, you know, every version of it in the film was phenomenal. Third time I saw the film, I was with my cousin. He's a longtime G fan. But whenever the theme played in the final battle, I remember he looked over at me and all I said was, I was looking at the screen, I was like, F yeah, baby, here we go. Out loud in the theater. But I wasn't doing it on purpose. It just happened, you know. I was like, yeah. I think the last time I did that was when I saw Shin Godzilla in the theater and the battle in outer space theme played in the final fight. Because, you know, that theme was like a classic JSDF versus Godzilla battle theme. And, you know, just hearing these two films, you know, just a classic Godzilla final ending fight, just phenomenal.
I do love the tempo that they give those, that it works so wonderfully as just this exciting, anticipatory kind of anthem. And again, it was just surprising to me that without the chanting, the King Kong versus Godzilla theme mixed so well with it. It's just, you know, it was a wonderful suite of the two of them, and it does give such a sense of excitement and of occasion, of import, of, you know what I mean? Just like, this is a big undertaking, which I seem to recall they did really well with the Yaguchi plan in Shin Godzilla as well. But just that real feeling of, this is all of us working together to do a really impressive thing. You know, and just sort of almost a rousing, inspiring, you know, I'd call it patriotic, but it has nothing to do with the country, but just with the operation that's going on, but getting you really invested in it and pumped for it. It's a wonderful mood piece and such an unexpected use of those themes reorchestrated to serve that purpose. It was surprising to me how wonderfully they worked.
And I have to give a shout out to Brendan, because whenever we did our like trailer discussion for this movie, he said he wanted them to use the like classic Godzilla march for, you know, the effort to fight back against Godzilla like they did in the original film. And then they did. So Brendan totally called it, which is cool. And another thing that was called by us was, Andrew, you specifically brought up the idea of them possibly showing Godzilla getting hit with the atomic bomb and mutating. And it's only for a split second, but they do show it whenever the bomb goes off. And then you just see his eye getting like the skin all getting burned off.
I loved that.
It was so cool.
I did not expect that scene at all, but it was great.
So cool. I was very happy with that, because as soon as you said that, I was like, oh, I need that. I need to see that. And I was very glad they did that, because we've never seen that before. So it was nice to just get something like completely brand new, where we know Godzilla is a product of the atomic bomb, but we've never actually seen it happen before. So it was cool to see that.
Yeah, I definitely prefer seeing Godzilla, you know, mutate because of the atomic bomb and then lashing out against humanity. Compared to the MonsterVerse, where he gets hit by like an atomic bomb 3 times and he's still a good guy.
Yeah, there he's just like, stop bothering me. I'm trying to go kill Mutos here, you know. And I think the third time, like, thanks for the snack, but
yeah,
here it's exactly the way you always pictured it happened just before 1954. Just like, ow, what was okay? Now I'm mad. And one of the things that I do love about him in this movie is that, like, when he uses the atomic breath, it burns him too. Like, his atomic breath is such an unnatural weapon. It is not meant to be wielded even by him. It's too much for him. And so he's like burning and on fire, but his healing factor is fixing it. And that's just a wonderful touch, because it does make him just such a smoldering, malevolent, still somewhat tragic, but also like, you know, it's that old, and if I'm willing to do that to myself, just imagine what I'm going to do to you kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
That he will set himself on fire to destroy you, and he can take it. Can you?
It's a really interesting Godzilla, because in some ways it's one of the weakest and like most vulnerable incarnations, where he's like, you know, he's got this weakness of being like vulnerable from like from the inside. His beam hurts him. Even the mine hurts him. The plane in his mouth is ultimately what kills him. His hide is like impenetrable, but even the kinetic blast of like that one ship's cannon seems to kind of knock him on his back for a second. But on the other hand, he's also one of the strongest incarnations, because his atomic breath is a literal nuke. Like he wipes out an entire city district with one blast, which I guess Shin did that as well, but Shin had to kind of drag it around a bit, you know, like he just minus one just had to make one impact and that was it. So like, yeah, he's kind of a glass cannon, I guess, but like it really works for the movie, because it, you know, it brings him down to a scale that allows our characters to be able to deal with him while still making him feel terrifying and, you know, intimidating and, you know, a true menace. It's a unique Godzilla is what I'm saying, but it was very effective for this specific story.
Well said, man. And I believe that, you know, if this Godzilla has a scar on his face, like his left cheek, it's like a lighter sort of tan color. I believe he gets that after Koichi blows up his face, right? On the boat.
Yeah, he does.
Like it heals back, but like a different color. I thought that was a pretty cool touch.
One of our rare scarred Godzillas. And when was the last one? In Godzilla Against Mechagodzilla, the second retelling of Godzilla versus Megaguirus. It's all connected, guys. It's all connected.
It all goes back to the black hole canon, man.
Andrew, I want you to log back into Toho Kingdom and just make an entire post about how Godzilla minus one is just like Godzilla Against Megaguirus and Tokyo SOS, and just see the chaos you sow.
Andrew, I'll ban anyone that disagrees with you. But one thing I like about Godzilla having a scar is that, you know, because Koichi could have killed him in the beginning when he was smaller. I mean, probably he could have. But the fact that he carries that scar, just kind of, you know, it's like, it's more personal for Koichi, because he marches in, destroys everything, even though you can see the damage that they've kind of given to each other, if that makes sense. But one thing I was curious about this Godzilla was he played by anybody? I tried looking at Wikizilla, and I couldn't find, like, a mocap actor. I'm only wondering, because even Shin Godzilla had somebody behind Godzilla, if you know what I mean.
So much of him is in the water. I would imagine it would be harder, almost not worth the effort to try and get someone to do that. But I do wonder for the on-land stuff, yeah, or is this sort of the first Godzilla with no human actor behind him? Because, I mean, even Godzilla 98 had that.
Yeah, although to be fair, Godzilla versus Kong also didn't have any motion capture for Godzilla, sadly, because
really?
I really like TJ Storm. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
See, that's kind of disappointing, you know?
Like, I agree.
I'm okay with CGI Godzilla, but you have to have somebody behind that, you know?
Yeah, it feels more authentically Godzilla if you at least have a motion capture actor there. I don't know if they did for this. I haven't heard anything, but I hope so. I hope it's just something that kind of gets revealed later on. Because as far as I know, I don't think TJ Storm was I don't think it was initially public knowledge that he played Godzilla. I think it was maybe something that they kind of like talked about later on, but I could be wrong. But I hope so. And I mean, he feels like a guy in a suit in the Ginza attack. I mean, not totally, because obviously they don't have the same restrictions, so he can move a lot more fluidly. But the way he walks and stuff, it's like this feels like a suitmation Godzilla, but CGI, you know?
Yeah, man. And I do appreciate that. Even if the anime is included, you know, and all these other CGI Godzillas, he always moves like a man in a suit, you know? Like, sure, his moments are moving fast, but he's like an Ultima, Earth, Shin, and now Minus One. He can still be played by a man in a suit, and I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Talking, you know, about this iteration of Godzilla, I also thought it was interesting, each new Godzilla special effects improve, we sort of start seeing capabilities that maybe all of them were supposed to have all along, but we're seeing them able to be portrayed the first time. Like, I thought it was really notable when Shin Godzilla was just evaporating buildings out of the way, like his beam was hot enough that everything it touched was just vaporized instantly. It didn't even interrupt the stream. You know, if there's a hose spraying and you put your hand through it, there'll be a gap in the stream where that water was splashed aside. Like, there's not even a gap in the beam. But then we did the math on Toho Kingdom Fantasy matches, and it's like, yeah, pretty much all of their beams, except maybe Showa, would have been mathematically hot enough to do that. It's just that special effects didn't let us show it until now. Same thing here. I just thought it was interesting to see Godzilla demonstrating Regenerator G1 so visibly. And ironically, he seemed to regenerate with the same speed that Orga had while stealing Regenerator G1. So it's something that we always knew, that level of regeneration capability is something Godzilla is supposed to have. We just never actually saw Godzilla himself using it in a film until now. So I thought it was just kind of cool to see that extreme regenerative ability finally showcased in a very visual way.
Yeah, it's one of the things where I don't want to make this sound like CGI is better than Suitmation or anything like that. I think all methods of special effects have merit to them. But it's kind of the thing where you can't just like damage your suit,
right,
and then have it regenerate. You know, it's the kind of thing where, okay, this is a benefit of CGI where you can show Godzilla's face getting blown apart and then just reforming like nothing happened.
Well, I mean, they could only afford to do that once. The second time when his face got blown apart, they're like, we're going to have to leave that in the movie. But yeah, I always would prefer to have a man in a suit. And I'm a strong advocate that, like, it's to your advantage because Godzilla can have infinite screen time in a suit and it doesn't cost you anything extra, unlike CGI. But if you're going to have a CGI Godzilla, it's nice to see them making use of just like the whole swimming posture scene. That'd be really hard to do with a suit, you know, as nearly as effectively. We've seen what him swimming like looks like in Godzilla versus Megaguirus. Keeps coming back to that movie. And, you know, it doesn't look that impressive. And the same thing with the regeneration. So it's like, if you're going to not have a suit, at least they're making use of all the things that having a CGI Godzilla is good for, all the things that you couldn't do with the suit.
He's in the ocean for like most of the movie, hey? Like I've never, there's never been a
except for Ginza.
And the island at the start, but yeah.
And he's in the countryside for a bit at the end.
For like, yeah, for a little bit, which is probably actually my favorite part.
That almost felt like a tribute to just the Showa era. It's like, here we've got him trampling a city, but now here we've got him in the countryside representing all eras of Showa. Okay, now we're good to get to the finale.
Yamazaki himself actually said that that was a nod to all the times he would show up in the countryside in the Showa series. So there you go.
Awesome.
I love you, Yamazaki.
I do love a good countryside Godzilla.
I do love that, to me, you know, we've talked about how sometimes Godzilla things seem to have a bearing on films that we've had before. Like Regenerator G1 wasn't introduced until 2000, but you kind of read it back into the Heisei movies and even some of the Showa movies where he suffers a terrible injury and then later on it's gone, even though it's probably just bad continuity with the suit. But we sort of say Regenerator G1 is introduced, but retroactively could probably apply to all prior Godzillas. I love that this movie, because of the time he spends in the water and because they specifically and canonically establish this is super deep 1,500 feet water, that all those times in the Showa and Heisei movies where Godzilla's out in the middle of the ocean and he looks like he's just standing up, that's just a thing Godzilla can do. I guess with his tail for stabilization, he can assume a very standing posture in the middle of the deep ocean. Because, you know, there are all those times where you're like, is the ocean really shallow enough that he's able to stand up right now, even though we're in the middle of the ocean? Like in Mothra versus Godzilla, where he's fighting Batra, he looks like he's standing up because in the Toho big pool, he probably was. But then they're way deep in the ocean. So this movie finally canonically says, yes, Godzilla can just rotate up and very stably float so that he looks like he's standing when he's in the middle of deep, deep waters.
Obviously, because of the plot, you know, they had the win in the end. But in the back of my head during the finale, I was like, you know, we saw Godzilla swim straight towards a battleship earlier and just demolish it. I wonder why he didn't do that after he blew up the other two ships.
Yeah, he tried and then they sunk him again. Because I know, oh yeah, it was Noda, the doc, was like, he can't just keep using his beam. It hurts him and he has to regenerate first. So it's like he fires it and then he's regenerating and then he goes to fire it again and then they sink him. And then when he's brought back up and he's still okay, he tries to destroy them with the atomic breath again. And then that's when Koichi comes in. So it's like, it's cool because it's like, he's not an idiot. Like, he doesn't just stop using his breath just because. He just never really got a good chance to use it on them again. I think that's very smart writing.
Yeah, that's true. It probably stopped him from, you know, swimming towards them anyway if he had to regenerate.
He probably didn't go up and grapple it because he knew he was going to keep some distance and just use his beam again. And in the meantime, they weren't hitting him with shells or anything, so he could afford to just wait a few seconds.
Speaking of the ship, the battleship that Godzilla destroyed, the first one, the one in the first kind of
the
boat.
The Takao,
yeah. Something I just learned like 10 minutes ago while we've been talking is that that was a real ship, the Takao. It was a ship of the Imperial Japanese Navy that was, because they say in the movie how it was sent to Singapore. It was actually sent to Singapore. The British kind of like confiscated it at the end of the war. And then it was in real life, it was sunk in 1946 by the Royal Navy. It was used as target practice. So I don't know. I just thought that was cool that they found like a real ship from history to use that was kind of around at this time period. I mean, it was actually sunk already by the time Godzilla appears in the movie, but that's kind of cool. And also the plane, the like experimental Japanese plane that Koichi flies at the end of the movie was a real plane. I think like it never really entered service. It was like created too late during the war, but that's a real plane. Well, the one on screen is not real. That's a model that Toho built, but that weird plane design with like the propeller at the back, that's a real thing.
Do we want to real quick just talk about the ending real quick?
Yeah.
I know for me in the theater, I was super hyped. When I was just watching it, I just kept thinking, especially during the boat chase scene, this is the greatest film ever. This is, you know, this is the great, this is the best. I'm loving this. And that's nice because a lot of movies I've gone to see in the theater lately, like Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, not really getting that feeling.
Totally. Totally.
So I was just super hyped. And when the attack in Ginza happened, and it looked like Noriko was killed. Obviously, you know, you don't have to be a big sappy romantic to be struck in the gut by a moment like that. Like, you're connected to these characters. You really care about them. I don't like that kind of thing too much in the first place. Obviously, sometimes it's necessary for the story, but it does not make me happy. So I think it's a testament to how good this film was that, you know, by the end, it was not enough to derail my enthusiasm, but I think that, you know, it might have dropped down to that 9 out of 10 just for being too hard to watch, if not for that ending. And for a movie that is so focused on the value of each life and on the importance of living and healing, I really felt like an unambiguously asterisk next to that happy ending, you know, an unabashedly happy ending was appropriate for a film like this. Like, obviously, you know, the sort of the melancholy victory with tragedy of something like Gojira or Raids Again is the right tone, or versus Biollante, you know, is the right tone for some films. But I felt like ending this one the way that it did was just the perfect choice for this kind of movie. It was absolutely the right cherry on top for me.
I completely agree with you. I don't think it would have really brought it down to a 9 out of 10 for me. Maybe more like 9.5. But like, I mean, it wouldn't have really like hurt it. But I do think that ending, it feels earned. It feels good until like after so much like devastation and tragedy with that Ginza attack and everything. And after so all the stuff Koichi's going through from since the very beginning of the movie, to just give him, you know, happiness at the end, it feels good to me. And I've seen people like criticize it for like, you know, it's so unrealistic that she survived after all that. And it's like, maybe like they could have just made her look a little more banged up. Maybe that would have helped a bit. Cause like, aside from like the thing over her eye and like the sling her arms in, she does still look like pristine. So like, maybe it would have helped to have her be a little bit bruised or something. But That said, to me, it's like, as far-fetched as it is for someone to survive that, it gets overridden by the emotion of the scene and how it feels satisfying to have her survive after all the movies talks about preserving life and everything Koichi goes through and stuff. And his performance, I can't remember the actor's first name. I think his last name is Kamiki. His performance in that scene is so good.
It is. It's great.
Yeah, that's what made me cry, was his reaction to seeing her again, because it feels so real. And it's like, that's exactly how I would be reacting in that moment, you know? And also, just to go back to her seeming death scene, as painful as it was to, you know, seemingly lose her, Koichi screaming while the black rain was coming down is exactly the type of thing that's right up my alley for an emotional scene like that, where it's like, it's almost like too on the nose with the black rain and everything. And granted, I think that is like a thing from Atomic Bombs anyway, right? But in like mixing that with his screaming, it almost feels too on the nose with the emotion, but it's just right. Hello, future Nick cutting in again just to say that I meant to say over the top, not on the nose. That's all. It's so good. I can't even like put it into words how much I like that. It's just so good.
I agree completely. And I should clarify, when I say it would take it down to 9 out of 10 for me, it's not like, to me, that would have been a wrong choice or made the movie any lesser. It just would have made it harder for me to rewatch or to want to rewatch, because, you know,
understand.
I'm not trying to say that would sad endings make for bad movies. They just make for harder to watch movies sometimes. But yeah, I agree. His acting in both those scenes was phenomenal, and that's what had me tearing up. And, you know, it's not exactly an original observation, but, you know, is your war finally over? Like,
oh, so good.
Just so good.
So good.
I did actually notice this time watching it, the second time watching it through, though, I don't think he ever actually uses that line with her. He only ever talks about the war not being over for him, like, after she's already gone. And so I like that it just sort of shows that it's like, it's not a specific callback or something they've discussed. It's just sort of that she knows him so well, she understands that's what's been going on with him. I just thought that was, you know, that could come off as cheesy writing, but instead to me it comes off as just a measure of their relationship and how close they are. So I like that.
It's very sincere.
Would you guys want a sequel to this movie?
Yeah, Bride of Godzilla.
I would accept a sequel to this movie, if nothing else, to explain that Borg assimilation creeping up her neck at the end, which I didn't particularly care for. But I would be perfectly happy with it being a standalone as well. Like, this is a movie that I think needs no sequel. It is perfectly self-contained as it is.
I agree, but I still want a sequel. Like, it's not like Shin Godzilla, where I was like, this movie's so good, but I want this to just be a one-off. Where, like, I wouldn't want a Godzilla that weird to keep coming back, you know? Like, and the ending was just such a perfect, like, they got him just in time, but also it's up to your imagination, like, whatever happens next when Godzilla unthaws inevitably, you know? So that movie, I did not want a sequel to Shin Godzilla because it just felt like the perfect ambiguous ending. But this, it's like, I want the characters here to like rest. Like I want these guys to be able to chill out, but I want to see this Godzilla again.
Yeah, I would definitely rather it be if there was a sequel like a Raids Again, where it's like same Godzilla, same universe, but different cast.
Yeah.
Let them keep their happy ending.
And I want Yamazaki to direct another Godzilla movie and write one, because my God, what a perfect choice for a Godzilla movie.
Yeah, man. If he had to do some kind of sequel or some just another kaiju film in Toho, I think Rodan would be a great choice. Rodan film. But not to take away from the fun being had here, but there's another connection of versus Megaguirus I just thought of. I saw Andrew's face.
Ike, no, don't do it.
Go on, be happy. But both Minus One and Megaguirus end with the protagonist in a plane jumping out in a parachute as they cause Godzilla's defeat.
And a post-credits or, you know, epilogue scene where it's like, oh, you thought Godzilla was dead, but he's back.
Yeah, no.
Which, to be fair, same thing with GMK.
Yeah, it's way, come on.
Inspiration, so.
Come on, it's way more like GMK.
Come on. Is it two sides of the same coin?
Andrew, you've opened a Pandora's box that can never be closed again.
I have. It is interesting, though. He apparently did take GMK as an inspiration, and I referenced this as the scene where, you know, the useless to the rescue, you know, with the young kid, as sort of creating a Japanese Dunkirk. He actually was inspired by Christopher Nolan's Dunkirk, so that was not an accidental connection there, apparently. Nor was the Jurassic Park sequence, which he listed that as one of his inspirations. So,
yeah, there were a lot of Jaws was a movie that occurred to me while watching Minus One, like just kind of the quirky characters on a little boat. Just real quick on the topic of a sequel, I'm kind of on the fence. Like, I kind of agree with you guys. Like, I feel like these characters are just like, their story's finished. I don't want to put them through anything else anymore. And like I don't, like Koichi, for example, I don't know where you would take him. But I think by having this like regenerating piece of flesh at the end, I think it sets themselves up to be able to do something really unique where, like, if Godzilla fully regenerates, if he comes back, he wouldn't necessarily be the same Godzilla, at least potentially, because like he's gone, right? Like it's just like a little piece of flesh. The rest of him is gone. His brain is gone. His memories would be gone, I think. I guess that's up to the director. But that's kind of my thinking, is like you could like bring Godzilla back and like it could be a totally new Godzilla, or it could be like a completely different kind of story with that little stinger at the end. So that's kind of my one thing with a sequel, is I'm like, that could be really cool. There's no like expectation of what it could be.
I guess if you want to be like, you know, cheeky about it, that Always Sunset on Third Street film that Yamazaki did back in 2007, that could be like a, you know, not like a sequel of Minus One, but like the characters in that film could have saw Minus One, and that's the Godzilla, you know, they envision in that film.
Like Minus One is like actually came out in the time period it took place.
Yeah.
In that universe. And that guy was like, man, that movie was so good. I gotta write some fan fiction.
He's like all of us.
But yeah, I guess just before we finish up here, it is worth noting that Yamazaki, and I'm sure this is common knowledge in the fandom at this point, but yeah, he directed Always 2 with the Godzilla cameo that was all over YouTube in the fandom until Godzilla came back in 2014, because it was all we had after Final Wars. And, you know, he also directed the visuals to Godzilla the Ride, which is also very cool and also takes place during the Showa era. And I actually think that was made while he was writing this movie already. But yeah, it's just been a long time coming for Takashi Yamazaki, and I'm glad he got a shot because clearly he deserved it.
And apparently the movie was all ready to go in 2019, but filming had to be delayed because of COVID. And during that process, the script was rewritten like three times while they were in lockdown. So it's possible that this may be the rare benefit of the pandemic, just giving him the chance to really refine and perfect the script unintentionally. But it's been even more of a long time coming that he was stuck for like 3 years all ready to go and not able to start.
Yeah. The pandemic did influence the script, because he said that all the bits about like them being on their own and the government just not helping was inspired by the government's early response to COVID in Japan. And he said that they got better with it as time went on. But like initially, it was apparently so bad that that's like what made him put some of the criticisms of the government. I think specifically the bit where they're like, we can't rely on the U.S. or Japanese government. I think that was particularly inspired by COVID, which is interesting.
And speaking of inspiration, apparently, the director noted that the scenes of destruction in Ginza were inspired by Higuchi's effects work in Gamera 3, Revenge of Iris. So that was apparently also an inspiration for this film. I mean, boy, this film just took from all the best.
It did.
And it shows. I also just thought it was neat, one other little deal that I had learned while reading here, that the Shinden, the aircraft, only a single one of those still exists in real life. And it's apparently in the Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C. But after this film was finished, Toho apparently anonymously donated their replica to a museum in Japan, in Fukuoka, and only, you know, revealed the connection to the movie after it had come out. But I just thought that was kind of neat, but also very interesting, because that means that, hey, any of our U.S. listeners that really likes the plane, you can actually go check one out without leaving the country. So, well, we could probably continue talking about favorite aspects of this movie, Till the Cows Come Home, it would be a good idea to leave at least one of those cows for deleted scene 1954 Godzilla to munch on, and leave the rest for when the random number generator actually hits this movie. So, for our first impressions episode, what are our final first thoughts on Godzilla Minus One?
Well, that Ginza tag scene with the atomic breath, I did that to my friend's backyard at a party a few weeks ago. I was Godzilla, you know, and everybody was onlooking as I threw up everywhere. But for real final thoughts, I really love this movie. You know, it's a great film. Deserves all the praise. And I'm happy it's going to get more people into Godzilla. Because when I saw it in the theater, I saw a bunch of, you know, kids going to see the film. So I'm sure it's going to inspire a whole new generation of Godzilla fans, and that's really special.
Yeah, it's a great movie. It's not, like, without complaints for me. Like, I do have criticisms, but it's an incredibly well-made movie with great characters. And I'm just so excited by the success it's had kind of in the world. It's just the coolest thing ever. So, yeah, really excited about Godzilla Minus One.
So for me, I don't think I've been particularly, you know, cagey or secretive about my impressions. I really did love this one. It did jump to my top five. I really just love everything about it. I would like more live action Toho Godzilla, please. I would like more movies like this, please. Like, this is what I've really sort of been waiting for since 2004, or at the very least, since 2014. Like, this is really scratching the itch in a way that I know a number of recent projects have, like Singular Point, have for other fans, but really have not for me. This is Godzilla that vibed with me, that, you know, that really clicked. So I just absolutely love it. Can't wait to get the Blu-ray and add it to my collection.
Yeah, and on the topic of getting more live-action Toho Godzilla films, they basically said, I mean, obviously this movie coming out 2023 specifically was a COVID accident, but they basically said that they're just taking their time with these so that they can be as good as they can be. Which is good. Like, as much as I want all the Godzilla films I can get, I'm glad that they just want to take their time and make sure they're putting out a good product. But yes, hopefully it takes less than 7 years to get the next one, but take the time you need, Toho, to make it a good one again. But yeah, just an amazing movie. It's also in my top five. But yeah, I mean, not much else that I haven't said, and I know we'll be talking about this movie again someday, so I won't go too long. I'm just so glad this movie exists. It felt so good seeing a Toho Godzilla movie in the theater when it was brand new. I think it's the best Godzilla movie we've gotten, to me, since 1975. So I guess that's my final thoughts for now.
But these are not our final thoughts for season four, as we are just getting started. So we hope that you will join us back in roughly 2 weeks. We're going to be a little more gentle on the release schedule, but still try and get that same amount of G-Force content that you've grown to know and love. So join us in a couple weeks-ish as we begin our interstitial project for this season. We previously tackled Zone Fighter, Godzilla the series, and then random number generator inspired comics. Well, we are going to stick with that printed page theme, but this time we are going to tackle another long-running series. In this case, an issue-by-issue look at Godzilla Rulers of Earth. So please join us back in a couple weeks for the first batch of those. I am excited, as this is one of my favorite Godzilla comics projects.
But before we go, we of course have listener feedback to read from none other than Ethan Storing. This piece of feedback was about episode 66, our Power Rangers 2017 episode. Ethan says, "Great episode as always. While I typically enjoy, or at least can regularly pay attention to, the movie this episode covers, I found myself weirdly uninterested this time around. My watch was a straight-up slog. Fortunately, your episode about it was exponentially more interesting and a much better way to spend my time. While I feel like this movie makes a lot of positive efforts towards unique character development, many of those efforts fall fairly flat. Fortunately for me, the standout, both in terms of characterization and overall development, is my original favorite member of the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, Billy Cranston. It's lovely that he landed so well with all of you too, as he's typically my main focus of interest when I watch this. For the record, I do not like the Zords at all. They're overmade, visually confusing, and just generally difficult to look at in the same vein as one of Michael Bay's Transformers. All of that would be extremely forgivable if they looked a lot more like their prehistoric counterparts. I defy someone who doesn't know what it's supposed to be to look at Zack's Zord and tell me it looks like a Mastodon. My MVP for this movie, quite naturally, is RJ Seiler, who knocks it out of the park as Billy. There really is no other choice. This has been Ethan, and in my sequel, I would integrate product placement by having the Rangers discover powerful and delicious new McCrystals, which imbue them with the powers of the mighty McRangers, capable of calling upon the power of the shining Golden Arch Zords to form the mighty Ronald McMegazord." Thank you, Ethan, and it's really funny now, in retrospect, reading this again, that you came up with the idea of the Ronald McMegazord, because since you left that comment, and I'm sure you're aware of this, there have been those Godzilla versus McDonald's commercials in Japan where Godzilla is fighting a giant McDonald's-themed mech. It's kind of like you predicted the future in a weird sort of way, just not involving the Power Rangers. But thank you again for leaving that piece of feedback. We're glad you enjoyed that episode on Power Rangers. And if you want to leave some feedback like Ethan did, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at GeForce Kaiju Pod. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/GeForceKaijuPod, or just type GeForce Kaiju Podcast into the Facebook search bar. You can email us at GeForceKaijuPod@gmail.com. You can leave a review on Apple Podcasts, and you can also give us a rating on Spotify and leave a comment under any of our episodes on Spotify. Thank you so much for listening, and again, please join us soon for the first four issues of Godzilla Rulers of Earth.
So to close us out for this first episode of season four, we're going to be discussing the hypothetical changes made to this movie as if it was released back before American distributors had any respect for Japanese Godzilla films.
I've been Ike, and it's been great to be back here with my buddies. And for a hypothetical American cut minus one, I can't believe they put so much Dr. Pepper, Nicolas Cage, and Steve Bloom redubbing Koichi's character.
This has been Andrew, and frankly, the scenes where the American Navy personnel just stood on the deck of their destroyer watching the final battle, ready to help out just in case, felt a little racially insensitive to me.
This has been James, and I really loved how the American cut took out all the Ifukube music and replaced it with stock music from 50s B-movies. I thought that was a real nice touch.
The Imagine Dragons song over the end credits was a really nice touch.
I feel like that's going to happen in Godzilla X Kong.
No!
They're going to be fighting Scar King to Radioactive by Imagine Dragons.
It could honestly happen. It's honestly possible.
Oh man, they're going to make us suffer. They're going to play the Thunder song.
Oh, God.
Oh, I feel sick just thinking of that. So I've been Nick, and I was just very glad that the U.S. distributors for this movie felt the need to make a new cut, complete with American newscasters cutting in every once in a while to explain what's going on. You know, like, just these kaiju movies, they're just so, they're just not straightforward enough. Like, I just really need someone to just explain what's going on, and the size of Godzilla's brain and how that relates to the various battles happening.
Kong is a thinking animal.
Godzilla has a brain about this size.
He's right.
Hello, and welcome to episode 69 of G-Force, a Kaiju podcast, a show in which a rotating cast...
I didn't expect that to be the number. Sorry. Carry
on. That's the first time we've never even made it through the opening sentence. Sadly, it's probably not the first time.
Because I'm here.
I also love that James? This movie...
I'm sorry, we keep talking over each other.
I think I was done. This is what we get for having...
I thought you were still in the middle of your point.
No. You think I had a point? You think I had a fully-fledged point? How dare you? Andrew's gone. He's off to run up and down the streets yelling about how Godzilla Minus One is very similar to Godzilla Against Megaguirus.
It's gonna be like Dr. Mifune.
anyone who will listen,
kicked out of university.
I love
and,
that.
And I know COVID influenced the script. Oh, sorry.
Oh, damn it. Sorry. You go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead. You go.
So, excuse me.